This is Active Lehigh Valley on 88.1 WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome to Active Lehigh Valley, generously supported by our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network. Our aim is to encourage listeners to be happy, healthy, and active, and I'm your host, Mike Drabenstott. I'm here today with David Barber, who is Senior Research Biologist at Hawk Mountain Sanctuary. We're going to be talking about bird watching and how it can be a component of a healthy, active lifestyle. David, welcome to WDIY and Active Lehigh Valley.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Tell us first a little bit about Hawk Mountain Sanctuary, the organization's mission, and the natural land that you preserve.
So Hawk Mountain is site of the oldest continuous hawk watch in the world. We've been counting migrating raptors in the fall since 1934. Our mission is in part to preserve birds of prey worldwide by providing leadership in raptor conservation education and science, and then also maintaining Hawk Mountain as a model observation, education, and science facility. So the reason why Hawk Mountain exists is because we are located on the Kittatinny Ridge, which is a major raptor migration flyway in the fall. And often when conditions are right, birds are really close. And people used to go up to Hawk Mountain before it was established and shoot hawks. So Richard Poe, who is a naturalist from New York City, found out about this and visited. And there's a picture that we have in the visitor center of the hawks that he laid out on the ground. Irma Brun, who was a New York socialite, found out about this and leased the original 1,400 acres in 1934 or 1933. And then 1934, we started a count led by Maurice Boone, a New England naturalist.
Great. Well, we'll get into Hawk Mountain a little bit more later.
Sure.
I want to talk about birds and bird watching. How'd you develop an interest in birds? I'm maybe being presumptuous that you do.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I love birds. It's actually a funny story. I grew up in New Jersey. I wanted to be the next Jacques Cousteau. So I really liked marine biology. And then I took a class from a professor at Rutgers University who I just did not like his teaching style. And I knew I had to take four more classes from him. So that changed the direction of my career. My advisor said, why don't you take ornithology? And I said, okay, I'll try it. And not really having an interest in birds, but interested in natural history, we had to learn all the birds that you could see in New Jersey by sight. And that was something that I could learn in the classroom, walk right outside, and you know what I learned in the classroom, I could apply to nature. So,
plus, you don't need all the underwater gear or anything like that, right?
I know, but you know, being by the beach, you know, that's the
little bit of a trade-off.
Me. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about bird watching, the description sounds self-explanatory, but I would think it's kind of like hiking in terms of the magnitude that you could take the activity. Maybe talk about that spectrum going from rank novice to dedicated veteran. What does this activity look like on both ends of the spectrum and in the middle?
So bird watching can be as simple as putting up a feeder in your backyard and watching birds come in. And it can start very basic like that, getting a field guide, learning what your neighborhood birds are, and then venturing out and learning more birds by sight using your field guide. But then kind of the next level might be, oh, I hear a bird singing. What is that? And starting to learn bird songs and identify birds that way. And then you certainly have careers in ornithology, but then there are also professional bird watchers, professional tour guides. There is a fairly large business of bringing people around the world to see different kinds of birds. There's roughly 10,000 birds in the world, and some people really would like to see all of them.
And when they say see all of them, I mean, a lot of people keep records of birds they've seen or heard, correct?
Yeah, it's a life list. Yeah, and I was guilty of that, you know, for the longest time. You know, a rare bird shows up, you know, a couple hours away, I jump in my car and drive up and see it and kind of check it off the list.
And how difficult was it to find it and see it? The world's a big place.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, nowadays, I mean, this was years ago when you would call up on a phone and listen to a recording to where, you know, rare birds were seen. But, you know, now there's so many listservs and apps that allow you to find out exactly where rare birds are. And often when you find out, it's on this road. So you drive up there, and many times there's vehicles lining the road looking at that bird. Or you run into somebody who said, have you seen such and such a bird? And they'll say, oh, yeah, I saw it 5 minutes ago. It's right down this road, that sort of thing. So, most bird watchers are very welcoming and want to share the knowledge that they have.
And going beyond, the very simple way to get started, maybe putting a feeder in the backyard, what's kind of the next step in terms of kind of getting outside of your own property and heading out into an open area?
So, the next best thing is just getting out to your neighborhood park, getting out to the local natural area, getting a pair of binoculars, and we can talk about the pros and cons of different kinds of binoculars. Also, there's lots of apps available now. Probably the most popular is the Merlin Bird ID app. So it is incredible in that it can walk you through what you're seeing or what you think you're seeing. So you can have it record, and it could ID the bird by sound. If you have a picture, you can upload it, and it would give you an idea of tell you what it is. Or it can lead you step by step. So I'm in Bethlehem, and it is August.
Middle of August, right?
Middle of August, and I saw this bird. It was on the ground. It's about robin-sized. It's this color. And then it will offer up, three or four suggestions of what species you might have seen. It's an incredible app. You do have to take it with a grain of salt as far as sounds go, but it is fairly accurate.
That sounds like a fascinating way where before you'd have a field guide, you have to pour through it.
Right.
And this is a way it brings it right to where you're at that point.
And one of the favorite things that I like to do, and I'm fairly adept at knowing all the bird sounds, but just going out on my deck, hit record and listen to what it's recording. And so hears something like a song sparrow. A little song sparrow will pop up and so on and so forth. So it will create a list for you of all the songs and sounds of birds that it's hearing.
It sometimes too, I think it sounds like it's a little bit of a teacher or instructor too. The more you hear it, the more it identifies, then you're able to recognize that yourself without even using the app.
Right, exactly. And that's the way I've always learned bird ID by song is hearing something. And I usually can tell if have I heard that before or not. If I haven't, actually following the sound and seeing the bird sing or call, that really kind of solidifies it for me. But it's the sort of thing that every spring, as birds are migrating through, they're all singing first thing in the morning. And those are the type of songs that if birds aren't residents here or are not staying here but keep moving north. It's those that I just have to keep reminding myself every year, because you only hear them for 4 weeks out of the year, and then you kind of lose it if you don't. You'll keep hearing it. So.
Just like Mariah Carey during the holidays. Anyway, let's keep going. You mentioned binoculars. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk a little bit about, I don't want people to think they need to go out and spend $300 on a pair of binoculars. What are some options with binoculars, and are there any other pieces of equipment to kind of help get started?
Binoculars can range anywhere from, $100 all the way up to $3,000. And in general, like most things, you get what you pay for. But there are some really good low-end binoculars for $100, much better than what they used to be. So there's a couple things to look out for. When you look at a pair of binoculars, it always has two numbers on it, so like an 8x40. So the first number, the 8, is the magnification, and the 40, the second number, is the size of the objective lens. And so it gives you an idea of how much light that binocular is going to let in. First, for just general bird watching, like a 7 or an 8 magnification, it works best. The other number you want to keep an eye out for is the field of view. So when you're just starting birding, you see a lot of people with these really small, compact binoculars. They may have a 10 magnification, but they have a really small objective lens. So the image that the person is looking at is dark, and it has a very small field of view. So if you're watching a small warbler darting from branch to branch, it's very difficult with a small field of view to be able to follow it. So a wider field of view, just if you're not practiced following birds, it's just easier to follow them. And that is one of the biggest drawbacks of those small ones, is that people probably just starting out may get a little discouraged because they can't find the bird or they can't follow the bird, and then it's gone.
Got it.
But then you can, as I said, you know, you can spend as much as you want to, you know, all the way up to $3,000, which are like eye candy. I mean, you look through these and, yeah, they're just amazing. So,
well, this is a Active Lehigh Valley. So let's talk about some of the physical benefits of bird watching, especially as you get out into different environments outside of your backyard. Mm-hmm. What are some of those benefits?
Well, I mean, just getting out and hiking is certainly a benefit, getting the blood pumping but just the walking out in nature really reduces people's stress, reduces anxiety. It's been shown through several studies that nature in general, or birds in particular, just the sounds of birds, listening to bird song or watching birds for 20 minutes reduces stress and cortisol levels, which is that stress-inducing hormone, for 8 hours. And there's been studies that look at neighborhoods, and those neighborhoods that have a higher diversity of birds also has people with less stress, less anxiety, lower blood pressure. So getting out and just being in nature certainly has a benefit both on the body as well as the mind.
I would imagine there are some birds, too, that I don't know if it's the right term, that might be a little more reclusive and away from developed areas, or sure. There might be some elevation involved. There could be some, right. You know, some, I don't see some rigorous hiking, but some, you know, decent distance and some decent elevation gain.
Yeah. So, I mean, you really can make it what you want it to be. I like to hike, and so I like to birdwatch as well. So I always have my binoculars with me, and that it can be as simple as, you know, walking a paved path or a gravel path through, you know, a riparian area, a very low stress on your body, or you can, you know, Hawk Mountain, the lookout is a mile walk from the visitor center on rocky terrain. There's lots of good hawk watching sites along the Kittatinny Ridge where it involves a substantial hike, either in elevation or distance, just to get to that perfect spot. So it really, you know, you can spend as much energy and as much effort getting to a new place to find birds. Because as you mentioned, some are reclusive and some are very habitat specific. So if that habitat's away from roads, then certainly it could be putting more energy into getting that air.
I was thinking also people that might have sensory challenges or mobility issues, there's still opportunities to do this. I think at Hawk Mountain, there's more of like an ADA path for a little bit. And
right,
if you have vision issues, the app or being able to hear the bird songs, or mm-hmm. if you have audio issues, you know, not being able to hear everything, that app can help identify the bird songs in lieu of your ears.
Right. Oh, exactly. And you know, there's lots of programs around nowadays. And as you mentioned, Hawk Mountain, we have our ADA accessible, what we call our Silhouette Trail, which is leads to South Lookout, and which is one of our two lookouts that we look at, watch fall migrating raptors. You know, everybody wants to go to North Lookout, and North Lookout can be fantastic. But some days, depending on weather conditions, South Lookout is the place to be. You can watch the raptors there. But we also have our native habitat garden, or native plant garden, is also ADA accessible as well. And that is often a very good, what we call a warbler trap. You know, it provides a lot of really good habitat in a small area. And then people can, you know, migrate through there and before they get to the lookout and see the raptors.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break here. We are talking with David Barber from Hawk Mountain Sanctuary. This is Active Lehigh Valley. We'll be right back.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Active Lehigh Valley, generously supported by our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network. And we're talking today with David Barber, who is a senior research biologist at Hawk Mountain Sanctuary, talking about bird watching as an active activity. We were just talking about some of the physical benefits mm-hmm. of being out and bird watching. And you talked about the mental side and the peaceful nature and some of the benefits that accrue to that. I would think there's also a benefit in kind of teaching your mind to be aware and mindful about what they're hearing and what they're seeing. And maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, the wonderful thing about bird watching is, I mean, you do have to be mindful. You have to be aware of the birds that are singing or calling, and then trying to identify the bird, look at its behavior. In order to do that, you really need to block everything out. Yeah, just being focused on the birds and just being able to block out everything else, one, reduces your stress. It reduces blood pressure. So I always find myself kind of recharged after I go out bird watching. You know, in this day and age when you're being just bombarded by social networks and news and all that, it's just nice to get away, particularly if you can get away to a nice area where you're not hearing road activity or something like that. It just recharges me, and then, you know, I can get on with my day. So my favorite time is birding first thing in the morning, you know, right when the sun comes up and the bird activity is at its greatest.
And I know there's been a lot of research over the years, too, about the benefits of social activity to someone's physical well-being. Mm-hmm. Even though your bird watching can be kind of in solitude, mm-hmm. there is a social aspect to it as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's as I mentioned earlier, you know, most bird watchers are very generous with their knowledge. And so there's lots of groups around Lehigh Valley and southeastern Pennsylvania in particular. I mean, Lehigh Valley has the Lehigh Valley Audubon Society. So they have usually bird walks and bird talks, so you can meet like-minded people. And frankly, one of the best ways to learn birds is to go out with somebody who is an expert or knowledgeable in the birds in that area, and can tell you why it's this species and not that species.
When you might get a little more feedback and more personal feedback than
right.
the app.
Right, exactly.
What steps can people take to make sure that bird watching is done safely, especially if they're maybe not used to going out into a park or a trail type area?
First and foremost, if you're going out by yourself, let somebody know where you're going and when you should be back. But other than that, I would say that, you know, go with somebody else. You know, it's better with a couple of people, and it's more social as well. But also, if you're going to do any long, strenuous bird watching, you know, take things like make sure your cell phone is charged, and maybe you have a first aid kit. Take water, food, depending on how long you're going to be out.
Don't assume their cell service.
That's right. Oh, exactly. I found that out last week.
Right. Yeah, take a map. All those common things with hiking, and also, I would think if you're out in nature, the weather could change quickly too.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, make sure you're well prepared. That what you know, sure what the weather is going to be like, and, you know, prepare for that by taking rain gear or what have you.
Right, as if you're just going on a distant hike.
Right.
You know, food,
exactly.
Water, things like that. Are there particularly good places in the greater Lehigh Valley to go bird watching, other than Hawk Mountain?
Yes. If you're interested in raptors, Bake Oven Knob is also a great place. You know, I'm not as familiar with the Lehigh Valley as most places, but the Lehigh Valley Audubon Society is a great source of information. There are some, I know Cherry Valley, a National Wildlife Refuge north of here, is also very good and has easy walking paths. So that's another great venue. I would connect with the local Audubon Society, and they can, and actually there is a book, The Birds of Lehigh Valley, that they published, and would have information in there about the places to go in the Lehigh Valley.
Are there any places, you know, certainly outside of a maybe 1 hour drive in the United States that are exceptionally known to be like really exquisite bird watching areas?
There's a ton of places. And it all depends on the time of year and what you want to see. So spring and fall in Cape May can be fantastic. I mean, particularly in the fall, because you have hawks migrating, but also songbird migrating at the same time. There is a place in Ohio, McGee Marsh, which is like a birding mecca in the spring because it attracts all the newly arriving spring migrants. They have a bird festival, and they have a boardwalk through the marsh, which can be amazing. And then, you know, further out, you know, southeast Arizona is just amazing place to bird watch birds. And then if you go down to the Everglades, it's spectacular because a lot of those birds are used to humans, so you can actually get very close, you know, on the boardwalks down there. There is the drawback of bugs, but yeah, so, you know, I think every state probably has these little hotspots where you can just have amazing bird watching.
And if you really get into it and have the means to travel to tropical areas and really see some spectacular specimens.
I mean, there's anywhere you want to go, New Guinea, Antarctica.
Friends are going to Costa Rica to see the most remarkable birds.
Yeah, I mean, some of the countries in Central and South America, you know, have 500, 600 species of birds, and it's just amazing. The hard part is going there, everything's new, so, you know, you just have to make sure you study up before you go. Otherwise, it can be just be overwhelming.
Yeah. Let's make sure we talk about some of the other programs at Hawk Mountain Sanctuary, especially what you're doing each fall with the raptor counts.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've been, our raptor migration count runs from August 15th through December 15th. And we count 16 species of raptors. We average about 16,000 raptors in the fall. It peaks in mid-September with broadwing hawks, where it's possible to see a couple thousand in a day.
Wow.
And then at the end of September, we start seeing more sharp-shinned and Cooper's hawks and more falcons. And then middle of October is really kind of the peak migration as far as diversity goes. It's also peak leaf peeping time, so the leaves can be spectacular up there. And also, we not only count raptors, but as counters, we count everything. So monarch butterflies, songbirds, swallows, waterfowl. And so there's a counter up there every day, unless it's raining, August 15th through December 15th. And then on weekends, we also have our conservation trainees who are there to answer questions and also provide public programming as well.
How do you use the information?
So we use the information, you can think of it. We're just one place that we're counting hawks. So we can look at our data and look at trends, long-term trends over time of the populations of these species. But in order to really get a full picture, we collaborate with other hawk watch sites. So Hawk Mountain, along with Hawk Watch International, Birds Canada, and the Hawk Migration Association, developed this raptor population index. And so every 5-10 years, we look at migration data from migration raptor or raptor migration watch sites throughout the U.S. and do a large-scale analysis and look at population trends, individual parts of the country in East, Central, and Midwest. And then we use that to try and bring awareness of the populations of raptors that are declining. So raptors are really apex predators. So if the population is of an apex predator is not doing well, there's something wrong with the environment, and that needs to be looked at.
And there are opportunities for people to be who are interested in birds and raptors to be trained, do the counts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So it can be a multi-year process because you have to be able to identify birds by sight as they're flying.
And you said 16 different ones too.
16 raptors. Different ones. And then you also have to be able to, if you're able to, age the bird. So some species you can tell adults from immatures. Some species you can tell males from females. So you have to be able to do that. And it helps if you know all the non-raptor birds as well. So we're always looking for people who are interested in counting, and we can put them in an assistant counter position, and then they shadow our counters. We have five counters on staff, or staff counters, and then 12 volunteer counters. So we have volunteers on the weekend, the staff count during the week. And we're always, you know, the best way to learn raptors is to sit by the counters and ask questions. And we'll be happy to tell you, you know, why this is a sharp-shinned hawk and not a Cooper's hawk or what something like that.
Now, with the, you said some of the busier migration days, you might be several hundred thousand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you make sure you're not double counting, or you're not missing people? I mean,
you know,
come on.
That's actually one of the top two questions. How do you know you're not counting the same bird twice? So the Kittatinny Ridge runs northeast-southwest. and the prevailing winds, at least they used to be, out of the northwest in the fall. And that creates a lot of updrafts on our north slope. And so as birds are migrating south, they often take advantage of those updrafts and migrate along the Kittatinny Ridge. So we're counting birds that are coming from northeast of us, north of us, and passing by. And we have this imaginary line. Once it passed that line, then it's counted. The only exceptions are if you see, we do have local bald eagles, which is a great thing now. But if you see a third-year bald eagle go by, and then 5 minutes later, a third-year bald eagle comes from behind us and goes up bridge, then we'll take it off the count. But in general, these birds aren't kind of hanging around. They're just flying in a straight
line. One place to another.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the interstate for them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And when you say taking advantage of the updrafts, they're using the updrafts so they're not expending as much energy by
exactly. So, by flapping their wings. Some of these birds are going all the way into Central and South America. So the whole idea is to minimize the amount of energy you use. So birds can, they can migrate in a couple different ways. They can either use powered flight, which are predominantly falcons, or they can use soaring flight. So there's either this, what we call ridge lift or ridge soaring, or they take advantage of thermals, you know, rising columns of hot air and do thermal soaring, which is what broadwing hawks do predominantly. So they ride to the top of the thermal and then glide out, find another one, and then keep going all the way to South America.
Beautiful.
And use very little energy.
Beautiful. And we did primarily talk about at Hawk Mountain the lookouts, but there's other property and other trails that are on the site. How many acres is it now, and what are some of the other features?
So we have 2,600 acres, 8-plus miles of trails. And those trails can vary from the ADA accessible trail to South Lookout. Our trail to North Lookout is relatively easy, a little bit strenuous at the end. But we do have trails that go down into the valley and back up onto the ridge and can be very strenuous. But those are places of the sanctuary that, you know, are less populated and can be really beautiful.
I remember the River of Rocks
trail. River of Rocks, yeah. And it's aptly named.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's also a trail coming up the other ridge. I remember there's a little bit of scrambling involved to get back to the lookout, right?
There is. The Skyline Trail going up to North Lookout is about a 40-foot climb down or up, as it were.
So, David, what are website addresses and social media handles that people can look for and follow?
It's hawkmountainsanctuary.org, and then Hawk Mountain on Facebook and Instagram.
Is there an email newsletter that Hawk Mountain has that people can kind of get?
If you on the website, you can sign up for an e-newsletter, so it'll give you an idea of what the count was like previous week and then what we expect the count to be the following week. So people can kind of get an idea of when the weather's best. So typically in the fall, northwest winds are our best winds, and that's when we see the most birds. So right after a cold front is usually the best time to visit.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you for joining us here at WDIY and sharing your knowledge about birds and bird watching with our listeners.
Thanks, Mike. It was a pleasure.
And again, we thank our friends at St. Luke's University Health Network who encourage us to be happy, healthy, and active. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, and this is Actively High Valley.